First, let's talk about the issue of the difference between qigong and physical training. Many of us confuse common qigong exercise with physical training. Actually, the differences between the two are huge. The differences are fundamental. You know, physical training usually requires vigorous movement, or at least you need to have a certain form of exercise. Whereas in qigong, we move very little. Even if there are movements, they are very gradual, slow, and rounded, not using any force. Even sitting there in meditation, motionless. So even superficially, there's a big difference between the two. But in their fundamental nature, the difference is even greater. Physical training aims at increasing the exercise capacity to stimulate blood circulation and speed up the metabolism to make the physical body, the muscles, stronger. Qigong cultivation practice, however, is just the opposite. It doesn't require this kind of strengthening of the surface body, of the physical body. What it really wants to transform is the interior of the body. In other words, as we say, it goes from the very origin of human life and transforms the person from the inside to the outside. Since the transformation is from the inside to the outside, some people who are sensitive can feel it. Some people are not sensitive, so they cannot feel anything. Moreover, qigong is a supernormal thing. It needs to have a person's virtue or de keep up before it can transform a person. Once the transformation has taken place, the changes are tremendous. Physical training, however, cannot achieve this, nor does it require one to emphasize virtue or de and so on. Of course, requiring one to be a good person and to pay attention to morality, that's an ordinary person's principle. It doesn't have as intensified demands as we cultivators do, so it's an ordinary person's skill. While our cultivation practice and qigong are things beyond the plane of ordinary people, so the results and the ultimate goals they reach differ even more. For example, by practicing qigong on a shallow level, we can achieve health and longevity, but physical training cannot. Moreover, with physical training, whether you're an athlete or a person with a strong physique, you cannot be free from illness. So when an athlete is meant to get sick, he'll still get sick. It's just that under normal circumstances, in the case of the flu or headaches and colds, his immunity is strong. But if he's supposed to get a major illness, he'll still get it all the same. That is certain. There's no way that athletes don't get sick. Qigong cultivation also differs greatly from it on a fundamental level. For example, with physical training, as I was just saying, what goals, what objectives does it have to reach in order to strengthen the body? It aims to do this, to increase the amount of exercise and speed up the blood circulation, thereby strengthening the metabolic capability. But when there is an advantage, there is a disadvantage. Things have to be viewed dialectically. If you keep doing this, there will inevitably be a bad element to it. Here we are giving a lecture, teaching the Fa Qi practitioners. We are not talking to ordinary people. So this is the environment in which we are talking. Why? Think about it. When a person is increasing the amount of exercise and speeding up blood circulation, it allows him to be constantly metabolizing. That is to say, he wants to enhance his metabolic capability and constantly substantiate his body with new cells to always keep his body going upwards. His cells are always like the sun at 8 or 9 o'clock, always going upwards. And as soon as the cell starts declining, it's eliminated. In this way, his physique is made stronger. Especially during a period of competition, an athlete's body must always be in top shape. For example, take the cell cycle as the 12 hours of daytime. In the morning, at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. or at 8 a.m., the cell is always on the way up, so at about 8 or 9 a.m., it's very strong. But past noontime, that cell cannot go up anymore. It can only slide down, right? It's keeping at a certain level and sliding down. It cannot go up anymore. Then it's no longer fit for the athlete's competitive condition. So he has to increase the amount of exercise, stimulate blood circulation, expel that old cell, and produce new cells to replace it. He's always in that state. By these means, he can make his body stronger. But he cannot be free from illness, because there's a karmic reason behind that. But, as we have said, although he became stronger, he also... When there's an advantage, there's a disadvantage. What disadvantage is there? Think about it. The cells of the human body cannot continue to divide endlessly forever, and you cannot produce as many cells as you want. The cell divisions are numbered. Then, if there is a limit to the number of cell divisions in the human body, and he increases the frequency of cell division, think about it, everyone. Wouldn't it cause his life to be shortened? Theoretically speaking, it would. Because in his lifetime, for example, if my cells divide 100 times, I can live 100 years. That's just an example. Actually, it's more than a million times. Live 100 years. Whereas all his cells are excreted when they've only gone halfway. They go halfway and are excreted, so he can live only 50 years. That's the principle, isn't it? That is to say, when there is an advantage, there's a disadvantage. From the surface, athletes look older. Teenagers look like they're 20-something, and those who are 20-something look like they're 30-something. Oftentimes, they're very old. Of course, don't worry, because they can't do sports for their entire lifetime. Modern sports competition is very demanding, so they're eliminated by the time they're 28, 29, or 30. Once they're eliminated from competitive sports, they become like ordinary people once again and live an ordinary life, so they won't look like they lost that much of their life. But theoretically, that's indeed how it is. How could there be an infinite number of cells? How could a cell continue to divide endlessly? It won't. There's a limit to it. Then Qigong cultivation practice, is just the opposite of that. It doesn't aim at stimulating one's blood circulation or increasing the metabolic capability. It's just the opposite. It doesn't speed up the blood circulation. On the contrary, it even slows down the heartbeat. At the same time, it can also make one's metabolism proceed very slowly. For example, if a person's cells divide once a day, a practitioner wants his cells to divide once every 2 days, once every 3 days, once a week. Because when a person is sitting in meditation, when he is tranquil, he can control his flesh body like that. Then this person's life will, in fact, be extended by a long time without him realizing it. His life will be greatly prolonged. This is speaking theoretically. Then there's also, his life is fixed there. How can it be prolonged? I've also discussed the following situation. If his system is not one of cultivation of both mind and body, in the course of cultivation practice, he can also prolong his life. When he prolongs his life, if he hasn't transcended the three realms, he's still subject to the limitations that exist within the three realms, so it cannot be prolonged at will. But the three realms is a matter of breaking through levels. If his level has broken through the three realms, nobody's going to mind if he prolongs his life. So he can also prolong it without limit, prolonging it for as long as he can. That is, in systems that don't cultivate the body, when one's level has broken through to a very high level, one can also prolong one's life. This demonstrates that, theoretically speaking, Qigong cultivation, practicing cultivation in such a state, can in fact delay aging and prolong one's life. But in systems that don't cultivate body, you see that after they have lived for a very long time, they look very, very old. So old, it's frightening. That's what will happen to them. Whereas in systems that cultivate the body, one forever looks young. Just now I was talking about the differences, the distinctions between physical training and Qigong cultivation. That's all I'll say about that. Next, let's talk about the activities of the human mind intent. Today we will be learning the fifth exercise, which requires sitting and meditation, practicing tranquil cultivation. So how do we require people to enter tranquility? In a little while, I will talk about these questions. A lot of people write notes to me. Some people have even come to me and asked me this kind of question, saying, "Teacher, how come when I sit in meditation, I cannot become tranquil?" There are also practitioners of other systems asking me, and there are practitioners of other systems asking other Qigong masters, "Why can't I become tranquil? Teach me some methods so I can become tranquil. Otherwise, I cannot practice Gong." So some Qigong masters tell them, "You need to count. You need to visualize. You need to focus. Focus on the Dantian or lower abdomen. Turn your sight inward." Anyway, there are all kinds of things. The Buddhist school also teaches chanting the Buddha's name. As a result, this person goes back, he tries it, and feels that it's a bit better, but he still cannot become tranquil. It can only be said that it's a bit better. Because it's a cultivation method, of course it can have a certain effect, but he still isn't able to become tranquil. So let's talk about this issue. Why can't one become tranquil? Actually, I'm telling you, the real reason people cannot become tranquil is not... It's not something you can resolve by resorting to any kind of method. First, let's talk about human thought activity, and then we'll explain these things to you. The thought activity we are talking about is thought produced by the human brain, its activities. We also call it mind intent, or yi nian. Human mind intent, or thought activities, according to some Qigong masters and present-day researchers of the human body as well as some others, I say they've gotten off track. They are researching human mind intent. They ask, why do Qigong masters or some people with extrasensory powers have mind intent that can do so many things? As soon as they think of doing something, they can do it. Thus, they direct their research at human thought, at human mind intent. Of course, they know that human thought is that when one is thinking about something, he is emanating something materially existing, but they don't know yet specifically what form of matter it is. Of course, we see these things very clearly. So they're researching the human mind intent. Actually, here I can tell you, the human mind intent is nothing. Human mind intent cannot do anything. Human mind intent is also not like what Qigong masters say, that it can do this and do that. All those Qigong masters who say that mind intent does this or that usually don't know anything. They don't understand anything. Because many Qigong masters cultivate the paraconsciousness, and there are also some who have been possessed, so they cannot see, nor do they know what supernormal powers they have or what form of gong it is. They don't know anything, so it seems to them that they thought about it and then they did it. They believe it was done by their thoughts. Actually, none of it is done by human thought. Human thought is very simple. What really did those things are the supernormal powers or gongnen. All you can do, only if this person has the supernormal power can he do these things. If you don't have the supernormal power, you can think until your brain aches, until you can't stand it anymore, and you still won't be able to do it. That is to say, human mind intent is commanding human supernormal powers to do things. It's not the mind intent itself that does things. You know, some Qigong masters say they bring forth people's supernormal powers. What supernormal powers can they bring forth? That is, this person's supernormal power already exists and it has a certain energy, it already works. It's just not connected to the person's brain, so there's no communication, as he cannot command it, so it doesn't work. When they say they brought forth your supernormal power, all they did was connect it for you, so that kind of supernormal power begins to work. That is to say, a practitioner does things by having the mind intent command the supernormal powers, while an ordinary person does things by having the mind intent command his sensory organs and limbs. So the mind intent is just like the production office in a factory. The specific things are carried out by the various production departments. Or like in a company, the general manager issues orders and then specific employees carry them out. That's the principle.
讲到这个意念呢,
Speaking of mind intent, let me incidentally talk about the human brain. The human brain. How can it think of all these kinds of questions? Why is the human brain so complex? From the viewpoint of modern medicine, the human brain is very complex. But it is not as mysterious as they imagine. It is very complex, but it's not very mysterious. Because we have discovered that the brain of a person's flesh body emerged and developed postnatally. So the true origin of his thought is not in the flesh brain. Instead, thought emanates from the person's true spirit, or 元神. When a person wants to do something, it's the true spirit that actually wants to do it. It is he who emanates that thought. So what role does the brain play? The brain can play the role of organizing, processing, and expressing things. Because what the true spirit emanates is not the language of ordinary human society, but a kind of cosmic message. After our brain receives it, the brain organizes it into our modern language, or gestures, or facial expressions, sentences, and fully expresses them. The human brain plays this role. So we have discovered that the true origin of human thought is the person's true spirit. In ancient China, there was a saying, heart thinking, heart thinking. I say that's very accurate. Some people do feel that they're thinking about things in their heart, that the heart is thinking. How can this happen? Because the person's true spirit is usually in the Niwan Palace, also called the pineal body. If it changes position and moves to your heart, then your heart will be thinking. We have a lot of practitioners and also some children who may feel that when they're thinking about something, they're thinking from their calf or from their heel. Some people feel that their stomachs are thinking. A lot of people will have this kind of feeling. Your thinking does indeed occur there. If your true spirit, a practitioner's true spirit or 元神 will change positions, a child's true spirit too can also drift. Then you will find that you are actually thinking there, that your thought emanates from that place. It is indeed so. Then speaking of human thought, how many different forms does it have? One is what ordinary people talk about as the usual normal thinking. That is, when the consciousness is very strong, when the main consciousness is very strong, that kind of thinking. That is, when we do something knowingly and consciously. Then there is a kind called the subconsciousness. And there is also a kind called preconsciousness. And another kind called inspiration. And so on. These kinds of forms of thinking. So let's talk about them. What we call subconsciousness is in fact when you have done something or completed something in a kind of trance, when your main consciousness was not functioning or when the main consciousness was fatigued. Regarding these things, when you come to your senses, you may think, how did I do it so absent-mindedly? Actually, at the time, your paraspirit was controlling your body, doing those things. You know, during Qigong practice, With many people, it can become particularly obvious that the power consciousness is controlling the body. Some years ago, there was a kind of natural qigong. This person would run all over the place like he was crazy, rolling around, and he himself, the main spirit, didn't know it. You would see him running all over the place with his eyes closed. But when he was headed toward a tree, running with his eyes closed, when he was right in front of the tree, he would suddenly swerve and wouldn't run into it. You would see a rock on the ground. When he ran up to it again, he would jump and he wouldn't stumble. His eyes were closed. How could he have avoided it? Because his power spirit was controlling his body and doing it. Then there is another situation. If a person's power spirit is very strong, or if in a certain state, or in a state of very deep sleep, when the person's main spirit is immersed in a profound sleep, there can appear a kind of state called sleepwalking. His main consciousness is not aware of anything, and his power consciousness is controlling his body and doing things. So what we just mentioned was the subconsciousness. Then there is also a kind called preconsciousness. We are talking about these several forms of human thinking. In fact, this preconsciousness is similar to when there seems to be some recollection existing in the person's memory. Like there seems to exist some sort of memory. That seems to be what they mean by preconsciousness, because all these terms were coined by men of letters, not by scientists. So when it comes to explaining them, it's hard to give them a definition. Then speaking of the question of inspiration, it is also a form of thinking, which also appears passively. So let's talk about how inspiration arises. Of course, the term inspiration was also produced by men of letters, not by scientists. They coined such a term according to that kind of state, but they cannot explain precisely what it is either. Then when men of letters talk about the origin of their inspiration, when they mention this term, they need to explain it. So in most cases, they explain it as follows. That is, all the knowledge accumulated in one's life comes out like a spark in that one instant. Or the best of one's accumulated knowledge comes out all at once. That's the explanation they usually give. Actually, I say, this explanation doesn't hold, even according to materialism. Because explained according to materialism, the more one's thinking or one's brain is used, the smarter it becomes. The more it's used, the better it works. Isn't that what they usually say? So why is it that when we're doing a scientific experiment, writing an essay, composing a song, or creating something, when we're beating our brains out, the inspiration doesn't come. When your main consciousness is very strong and is trying to make inspiration come, it doesn't come. In most cases, inspiration comes when the consciousness, the main consciousness, is not strong. When you're absent-minded and you're not paying attention, when your main consciousness is relaxed, that's when it comes. That's how it usually is. You're writing an essay and you get stuck. There's no inspiration. The writing doesn't come out. Or you're doing a scientific experiment and can't get it to work and you're beating your brains out. Of course, after being so tired for a long time, your brain gets dizzy, pressure builds up to the point where the veins are bulging, and you still can't come up with it. And you say, ugh, forget it, call it quit, let me take a break. You go outside to walk around, watch something fun, get some rest, or you lie down to take a nap and get some rest. Then once you lay down, or when you went for a walk, unintentionally, when you were not using the brain, the inspiration came. It's guaranteed that inspiration always comes when one is in such a state, when it's not intentional, when the main consciousness is not functioning. So how is it to be explained? I'm telling everyone. This inspiration was actually the result of your power spirit. It was not your main spirit that thought it up, because a part of the main spirit's thinking is locked up. So when you're thinking, no matter how smart and capable you are, you can only know the bit of information that you have acquired in the present society. But all this knowledge you learned in the present society are ordinary people's things. Whereas the thing that you want to create, the brilliant essay that you're trying to write, are all things that don't exist beforehand. That is to say, it is beyond the range of your knowledge. Oftentimes it's like that, because a person's para spirit is in another dimension. It sees these things very clearly. When you can't get something to come out, whether it's a scientific experiment or an essay or an invention, when you can't figure it out, the more you want to figure it out, you're straining your brain and feeling an ache. You may even feel very tired and uncomfortable. But the paraspirit, even though it doesn't control your brain, is still a single unified whole with your body. He is also controlling your body at the same time. When you ache, he aches too. When you feel sick, he feels sick too. When the discomfort gets really bad, he has a problem with it. Look, this matter is so simple. How come you're so stupid? Can't you figure it out? You're making my brain ache. He is aching together with you. But when you relax, because the stronger your main consciousness is, the more you will occupy the brain. So others, that is the power consciousness, cannot get in. But once you relax, he has a chance. He reflects onto your brain the things that he knows. And then suddenly you think of it. You feel the inspiration has come. Oftentimes it's like that. And some people may think, let's use the human power consciousness to promote the progress of society. Let's create some new high-tech things. Wouldn't that be great? That won't do. Because his knowledge is also very limited. He can only know the state of things in his currently existing dimension. Then those who come from a very high level won't go for it. They don't care about these things of yours at all. They all know this principle, and they are not under your control. Because the entire cosmic climate, Chinese people talk about the timeliness of heaven, as in the timeliness of heaven, auspiciousness of the earth, and harmony of man. You know about the Book of Changes, or Zhou Yi. It's currently even being researched overseas. Actually, it just describes the correspondence between changes in the cosmic climate in the Milky Way and ordinary human society, how it causes ordinary human society to change. That is to say, a different cosmic climate can cause human society to undergo different changes. Human society is developing according to a pattern of the universe. You see how the movement of matter has a pattern. Different forms of movement will have different states of movement. They'll bring about different states of movement. The Milky Way is rotating, and the nine principal planets are orbiting around the sun. That is to say, their rotation, the different changes of the Earth, the different changes in the cosmic climate, can bring about different changes to ordinary human society. So as I was just saying, it cannot be subject to your will, to what you artificially want to do. That wouldn't do. Just now, we were talking about inspiration. Speaking of human inspiration, that's all for now. So just now, we talked about these several forms of thought. Some forms of thinking. Why do we discuss these forms of thinking? It is mostly to tell you. We've discussed the function of the brain and the origin of its thinking. Because we'll be learning the tranquil exercise today, so we have to talk about the question of how to practice the tranquil exercise. As I just said, there are people whose thinking cannot become tranquil, so they go around looking for someone to teach them some fancy tricks that will enable them to become tranquil. Actually, true cultivators find these things laughable. Because the real reason for the inability to become tranquil is not something that a fancy trick or method can have an absolute effect on. As a cultivator, if you can make your thinking tranquil, then you're already on a very high level. Because it is interrelated with your level. That is to say, it is interconnected with your power of concentration. Doesn't your power of concentration determine your level? And doesn't the height of your power of concentration depend on how much you have let go of attachment? Frankly speaking, I'm telling you, the real reason one cannot become tranquil is that the person's thinking is not clear and clean. There are too many things you are attached to and cannot give up among ordinary people. Then if you were told to completely give up those things all at once, could you do it? For you to immediately achieve a very high power of concentration is impossible. So you give it up little by little. Your attachments are eliminated little by little. Your level is broken through little by little. And your power of concentration is also increased little by little. And eventually you can reach that stage. So why is it that many people can become tranquil immediately? That's because their inborn quality is within a certain state. So the fundamental reason for the inability to become tranquil is not something you can seek outside yourself. Even if a deity were to come to teach you fancy tricks, you wouldn't be able to become tranquil. And then some people are thinking, then why do some Qigong masters teach us that things like chanting the Buddha's name, focusing on the Dantian, focusing the thought, or visualization can make one tranquil? They cannot make you tranquil. It can only have a slight, immediate effect within a short initial period of time. And after that, they'll be no good again. They're nothing more than a cultivation method. They're not magic tricks. There are no shortcuts in cultivation matters. Let's give an example. Some people don't believe this, saying, if I focus on the Dantian, I can become tranquil, or I can become tranquil by chanting the Buddha's name. I say not necessarily. Some people say that the Pure Land cultivation way is easy, and you can cultivate just by chanting the Buddha's name. Actually, I'm telling you, the easiness is on the surface, but to not be easy. Now that's truly the nature of cultivation practice. How could it be so easy? Think about it. How does one chant the Buddha's name? You have to chant it with your whole heart and mind, without any distraction. Every character will appear before your eyes. You chant Buddha Amitabha, Buddha Amitabha, Namo Buddha Amitabha, to the point where every character appears before your eyes. Can you attain that power of concentration? You can't. It's guaranteed that you can't. Some people don't believe it. If you don't believe it, give it a try. There are too many such examples. If you don't believe it, try chanting the Buddha's name. The things you are attached to in ordinary human society are too numerous. Your work unit is giving out bonuses today, and you don't know how much you can get, or your work unit is allocating apartments now, and they tell you there is one for you. But is there one for you? Your heart's flopping around as though there's a rabbit on it, or your office, or your child is taking the college entrance exam, and you're worried if he can make it. Anyway, the things you're attached to are too numerous. Maybe your relatives and good friends also have something going on, and you're worried about that too. You're always thinking about these problems. Tell me, what are you going to do? Can you become tranquil? Will chanting the Buddha's name make you tranquil? If you don't believe it, then try chanting. Your lips are chanting Buddha Amitabha, but your mind is thinking something else. On your lips, you have Buddha Amitabha, but in your mind, you're thinking, how much of a bonus can I get this month? And your lips are still chanting Buddha Amitabha. If I get a small bonus, how come the person in charge of bonuses is at odds with me? But on your lips, you're still chanting Buddha Amitabha. The more you think, the angrier you get. If I get a small bonus this month, I'll have to fight with him. Won't this happen to you? It's guaranteed to. It is a cultivation method, but it cannot have an absolute effect. True improvement depends on yourself. Only when you give up attachments can you increase your power of concentration. And conversely, your level also rises. When you've given up attachments, then of course your level will also be making breakthroughs. It will have reached this high, and your power of concentration will also be this high. So they're interrelated. Some people say, if I look inward at the Dantian, I can become tranquil. I say, not necessarily. With some people, it's the eyes observing the nose observing the heart, and the heart observing the Dantian, or directly looking inward at the Dantian. Both ways are fine. Go ahead and observe. See? Of course, for those who refine Dan, it's a round clump of white matter in the belly. It has to be pure, too. If it's not pure, it'll be black matter, some dark, impure thing. So you're looking at that Dan in your belly. It's shiny. You're looking inward at Dan Tim. Your Tianmu is open. You've seen it, but you still cannot become tranquil. Can't you keep your focus on it and become tranquil? You cannot keep focus. You're looking at the Dan and it looks quite pretty, and before long this Dan turns into an apartment. Three bedrooms and a living room. The work unit is allocating them right now. Three bedrooms and one living room. My daughter will live in that room, my son will live in this room, or we, the old couple, will live in this room, and the center will be the living room. Pretty good. Before long, the den turns into an apartment. It's guaranteed to be like this. That is to say, the true reason for being unable to become tranquil is that one's heart and mind are not clear. Then raise yourself little by little. We're not forcing you to instantly reach a certain stage. In cultivation practice, you're allowed to raise yourself gradually. But you cannot relax your requirements for yourself. You say, oh, the teacher said to cultivate gradually, so let me cultivate gradually. If you relax the requirements for yourself, then how could you practice cultivation? So if you're really unable to become tranquil, it's not something to seek outside yourself. True cultivation is to cultivate your heart. Seek within your heart. Only when you've raised your xingxing, or mind nature, and have come to take attachments more lightly, can you become tranquil. For so many years, people have pursued it like an ordinary person's skill, but it is actually beyond ordinary people, and it has an extraordinary principle accompanying it. So it is not like an ordinary person's thing that you can obtain by putting in the work or by paying some money. You must truly raise your moral standard and cultivate your xingxing before you can attain it. And as for putting in the work, of course, toiling the body is one aspect, but it is a very, very minor aspect. Speaking of this mind being unclear and unclean, this comes from ourselves, subjectively. It's a fundamental reason why one cannot enter concentration, why one cannot achieve tranquil cultivation. But now this state of society is also very complicated. There are people with all kinds of mental states, and there are all kinds of bad people. The other day I said that it's even hard just to be a good person. If you don't believe me, try learning from Lei Feng these days. You get a lot of sarcasm and backbiting. If you don't believe me, suppose your work unit made you a role model, or gave you a bigger bonus, or made you a model worker. Then I think that would bring quite a lot of pressure on you. All kinds of sarcasm would come your way, innuendos and whatnot. You're a model worker. You got a big bonus. Go for it. Do this work. You're good at it. We can't do it. You're a model worker. How come you came so late today? You should come earlier, and when we get off work, as a model worker, you should leave later. So as I said, it's hard to be a good person. If you don't believe me, try doing something good. That is to say, apart from the subjective reasons caused by attachments and interfere with one's cultivation practice, there are also some objectively existing factors. What I talked about was one aspect. Then there is also another aspect. For example, of course, after the policy of reform and opening up, the situation in the country is very good. Living conditions have improved and new technology has come in. You say these are good things. Even I say they're good things. But when there is an advantage, there is a disadvantage. It also has shortcomings. People are all saying now that the spiritual civilization is deteriorating. The material civilization improved, but the spiritual civilization didn't keep up. Everybody's saying that. Let's discuss some present-day examples. Nowadays, the moral values of mankind are already quite low. Westerners have an outer layer of civilization covering them. So superficially, they talk about this person being well brought up. They emphasize being civilized. But behind that, the bad things they do, they no longer have family ethics. They dare to do anything. Right? They just have that little bit left. As for Chinese people, they had moral values in the past that restrained people. But people nowadays don't believe in anything. They say it's the Dharma ending period. That is, there is no morpha in people's hearts to restrain them. They'll do anything. Anything. But in certain people's hearts, there is that little bit of morality, just a little bit of morality left. A bit of conscience is still there. If this little bit were to disappear, people would be finished instantly. So there's just that little bit left. Look at what people are doing now. Along with reform and opening up, bad things also came in, and they can affect people's cultivation practice. Of course, reform and opening up are good, but didn't bad things also come in? Things like pornography, homosexuality, drugs, sexual liberation. Anyway, terrible mess. Organized crime, there are all kinds of things.
就说这些事情啊。
That is to say, objectively speaking, these things cause interference.
咱们就说这个文艺作品。
Let's talk about the arts.
这个电视啊。
If TV shows TV shows and movies don't contain some bedroom scenes, it's as though nobody will even watch TVs or movies. There's the issue of box office and TV viewer ratings. If a novel doesn't have some pornographic stuff, some messy stuff,It's as though the book won't sell. There is the issue of sales volume. Now people's moral standards are very low, so they go for whatever quenches their thirst. They seek mental thrills. Come on, whatever will quench their thirst, only then can they satisfy their cravings. Morality is sliding down. In the past, the entire morality is on a giant downslide. In the past, to become an artist, a singer, or a dancer, one had to graduate from a music institute or a dance institute. At least you had to graduate from an art school or you had to receive a professional education. Now there could be someone with a hoarse voice, twisting in weird shapes, looking ugly and long-haired.This is a singer. People follow him like they're crazy. That is, when the level of people's morality is sliding down, their literature and their art forms, everything slides down. What do people admire? Singers used to cultivate their voices. As vocalists, they paid attention to enunciation methods. If this person stretches his hoarse voice, I say it's just like, ah, his veins bulge and the crowd applauds like they've gone crazy. That is, everything is changing. Then there are also some works of literature and fine art, whereby if there's no nudity in it,It's as though nobody will look at the painting. I'd say that for Europeans it's not too bad, but Chinese people in the nude, I'd say it doesn't look good. Just pointing out these things. As a cultivator, do you watch TV? Do you watch movies? Do you read books? As soon as you switch them on, all these things are in there. For cultivators, in the past we said, do not come in contact with these things, right? So as to avoid interference in your cultivation practice and bringing out your seven emotions and six desires. But now you can't avoid coming into contact with them. You don't look at them. But you can't help seeing these things. As soon as you switch it on, there it is. You're walking on the street, if you don't watch TV,or movies or read books, you walk on the street, there are nude pictures and whatnot right on the street. You see them as soon as you look up. That is to say, these things do have the objective effect of interfering with one's cultivation practice. But we're telling you, objective conditions for cultivation practice are not beneficial for some people, but I say they are actually beneficial for some others. Lao Tzu said, when a superior person hears the Tao, he practices it diligently. When an average person hears the Tao, he practices it on and off. And when an inferior person hears the Tao, he laughs at it loudly.If he doesn't laugh, it's not worthy of being the Tao. What does it mean when a superior person hears about cultivation practice? He says, this is great. He has the heart to do it. He'll study. He will cultivate straight to the end. He'll think it's really good. He'll settle for nothing but success in cultivation. He'll be determined. He'll set his heart on cultivation practice. That is the superior person who hears the Tao. No matter who tells me not to cultivate, I won't listen. I'll keep cultivating. And when an average person hears the Tao, he practices it on and off. To practice is fine, to not practice is fine too.He sees that everybody has come to learn. More than 4,000 people must be quite an event. So he comes to check it out to see what's going on. He listens and finds it okay. He hasn't heard this knowledge before. It's pretty fresh. After he goes home, as soon as he becomes busy, the practical interests there are still more tangible. So he forgets all about practice. This is the case of an average person who hears the Tao. Anyway, if you push me hard, I'll practice. If you don't, I won't. He practices it on and off. When an inferior person hears the Tao,He laughs at it loudly. If he doesn't laugh, it's not worthy of being the Tao. What does that mean? When an inferior person hears about practicing cultivation, he laughs out loud, he really laughs, covering his mouth. He doesn't believe in that stuff of yours. He thinks, you people are unbelievable. The practical interests are out there, yet you don't fight and compete for them. Isn't your life so dull? Look at other people. They've got money and beautiful women. They indulge themselves. What's up with you people? You're unbelievable. You really are unbelievable. Look at you. When someone hits you, you don't hit them back. When you're yelled at, you don't yell back. Of course, if this kind of person didn't laugh at you, then I'd say this Dao isn't precious. Baozi said it wouldn't be worthy of being the Dao. It would just be there on the street, then you'd casually pick it up and succeed in cultivation just like that. If he didn't laugh at you, it really wouldn't be precious. It's precisely because it is precious that the so-called smart person, or one who thinks he's smart, is actually foolish. Just now, we were talking about tranquility and being unable to enter tranquility, about the forms and states of human thinking, and also about circumstances that interfere with tranquility. That's all we'll say about these. Of course, there's another thing that interferes with one's tranquility and cultivation practice, and that's thought karma. I talked about it before. This thought karma can also interfere with one's practice. It can produce a lot of dirty words. It's expressed quite noticeably in some people. But if your main consciousness is clear and you can control yourself, we can help you eliminate this karma, or yeli. If you yourself fly down with it, then you're not a cultivator. Aren't you the one cultivating? If you start swearing along with it and lost your belief, how could you cultivate? Who's going to take care of you? Isn't that the issue? Next, let's discuss another issue. What issue? In the cultivation community, we often hear this kind of phrase, that the person's inborn quality, or genji, is good or bad. What is the person's inborn quality? Actually, it's just the relative amounts of the white substance, de, and the black substance, karma, that make one's inborn quality good or bad. For example, a person who has a lot of karma usually has a large field of karma around his body. A lot of people's qianmu are opened on a very low level, yet they can see very clearly. If your level is low and on top of that you can't see clearly, then that's really lousy. But there are people whose level is low, yet they can see clearly. They can see that nowadays people have viruses all over their bodies. There are viruses everywhere. Actually, it's just karma. Reflected into this dimension is karma. So I said that if a lot of karma is accumulated, it will form a field around the person's body. And this field of karma, this karma is the opposite of the characteristic of our universe. It's a substance that goes against the cosmic characteristic. As such, this person's enlightenment quality will become poor. Usually when a person's inborn quality is bad, his enlightenment quality will also be bad. Why will it be bad? Because he's done so many bad things, and thus generated so much karma, that he thinks that the things to be believed in are those practical interests among ordinary people. Moreover, his thing, that karma, envelopes him, and thus separates him from the cosmic characteristic. He himself has formed a separation from the cosmic characteristic, thus his mentality doesn't believe in the truth of the universe. If you mention qigong or cultivation practice or religion or even some qigong phenomena that people talk about, and also some other phenomena in various environments that people cannot explain, as soon as you mention him, he doesn't believe any of it. Not only does he not believe, inside he'll laugh at you. You people are... It's almost as though you have mental problems. He really believes that way about you. He thinks his mind is clear. He thinks he is the most rational. Actually, it's because his thinking, his whole body is surrounded by karma. That's the reason why he doesn't enlighten. why it's very hard for him to enlighten. Now, if a person has a lot of white matter, there'll be a... a very large field of de, of white matter around his body. This de, or virtue, this white matter was obtained by doing good things, by bearing hardships, or by putting in an effort, so it is assimilated to the cosmic characteristic. So if you talk about cultivation practice to this kind of person, just like I was saying about when a superior person hears the Tao, he believes it immediately. These things you're talking about, even though I haven't seen it, I still believe it. Because he is connected to the cosmic characteristic. This is what we call good inborn quality. This is how what's called good or bad inborn quality comes about. While the black matter is just the opposite. It's obtained because the person did bad things, committed wrongdoings. De, or virtue, is obtained when you have given out, or have been taken advantage of, or have endured hardships, or have done some good deeds. The amounts of these two very different kinds of matter determine whether one's inborn quality is good or bad. Just now I said that inborn quality determines whether a person is good or bad. This is certain, but at the same time it cannot be regarded too absolutely. For example, a person with very good inborn quality is oftentimes affected by the environment. Just like the kind of person I was talking about. That person with the qigong state, the education he received and the environment he was in contact with makes him think that he is very rational and very materialistic, that he is an absolute materialist. Then an absolute materialist, I think there isn't anything absolute. Absolute materialism is already incorrect. So whatever he hasn't come into contact with or hasn't learned, such as this lifetime or this life, these matters he doesn't believe. Whatever you talk about, he doesn't believe. But such a person's inborn quality is not necessarily bad. There are some cases like that. For example, when I was teaching a seminar in Beijing, there was such a person. In this field, we open people's tianmu on the second day. And many people see a lot of things on and off. And some people can see somewhat more clearly. He was one of those. He could see rather clearly. All at once, his tianmu, not only could he see clearly, but he could also directly communicate with my fashion or law bodies. He saw what I was sending out. When I'm speaking, I'm emitting all kinds of supernormal powers from various places on my body, and he saw what the emitted power looked like, what they were like when they landed on people's bodies and how people's bodies were being adjusted, how there were several fasten behind each person. He could see all of this. Then, during the break, in the lounge outside the lecture hall, while they were taking a break outside, he was telling people about the things he had seen, and everybody was listening with great interest. Everyone gathered around him. They were saying, "Wow, your tianmu is open so well. You can see so much." And he kept on talking. Then at the end, he said, "I don't believe in these things." Somehow his thoughts turned around, and then he didn't believe again. That is to say, as I mentioned, it is not absolute. And then there are also some people whose inborn quality is poor, but due to the influence of the environment, their enlightenment quality can also become good on some points or on some issues, although it's limited. If everyone in his family believes in religion, or if some people in his family have pretty good inborn quality, they practice qigong or other cultivation methods and have developed some supernormal powers, and he has seen it, that can make him believe. However, it's limited. Just now I discussed the question of inborn quality. So now that we've gotten to the question of this inborn quality, what gives rise to how much white and black matter a person has? I've also mentioned this transformation process. One part is when one is putting in an effort or bearing hardship, the black substance can transform into the white substance. By doing good things, you can at the same time directly generate white matter. Or when somebody mistreats you or makes trouble for you, he will give you white matter. And black matter is produced by doing things that aren't good. However, a person will say, "Am I doing good things or bad things?" I said, whether you are doing good things or bad things, as a cultivator, Some people think, let's go do good deeds. What good deeds can we do? Teacher, tell us what we can do so we can accumulate de. Actually, I've never said anything about this before. If you start accumulating now, you won't have enough time because it's left over from many distant ages. That little bit of yours from this lifetime, what you accumulated during the first half of your lifetime, is very limited. So you cannot possibly accumulate a lot. It's actually left over from an extremely long period of time. You say you want to accumulate it now, but it's too late. Practitioners believe in non-action, yet you're running around all over the place doing things. Even if you truly do good deeds, you may not even run into a good deed. In the past, in Beijing, I made the following joke. Say you want to do good deeds, but even if you were to bike all over Beijing, you wouldn't necessarily come across a good thing to do. How could you run into that many? Actually, we practitioners talk about the state of non-action. Why do we talk about non-action? Because one must not take the way of action and do whatever he wants to do. Some people say, can't we do good things? I say, there are a lot of people doing good things. If you come across something good you can do, if it's right in front of you, and you incidentally help someone, then help them, it's no problem. We cannot go around doing such things intentionally, purposefully. Because you don't see the nature of the situation and its causal relationship, so you're liable to do something wrong. It seems to you it's a good thing, but if you do it, it may turn out to be something bad. Because there is a higher level principle for you. Is there a karmic relationship behind this situation? You cannot see it, so you're likely to do it incorrectly. So if you saw a person starting a quarrel or a fight with another person, and you were passing by and pulled them apart or stepped in, you may have done something wrong. That person swore at him, or maybe he owed him a word from before, and he was coming to settle accounts. You intervened, and they couldn't settle accounts, so next time they'll have to go at it again. So you have instead intervened incorrectly. That is to say, when you cannot see the causal relationship, you're likely to do things that are wrong. So doesn't this bring up the following issue? If some of us are thinking, does that mean nobody should do good deeds? No, it does not. I'm teaching the facts to practitioners. Well, doing or not doing good things is for ordinary people. Ordinary people pay attention to accumulating de and doing good deeds, while practitioners pay attention to preserving de, to non-action. However, conversely, let's say that if you were to see a murder or arson, and were to do nothing about it, that would be, I'm telling you, that would be your xing-xing problem. If you see these kinds of things, then I say you should do something about it. Do what you can. Say you see someone using a knife to try to kill someone, and you're a woman, a fragile woman. If you were to step in, you'd get knifed yourself. You could call others to intervene. When you really come across such things, you can do something about it. Or maybe you see a water tap flowing, and nobody's taking care of it. If you don't turn it off, that would also be a problem of xing-xing, wouldn't it? That is to say, we must not intentionally and artificially do whatever we want to. Then let's talk about it from this principle, from the point of view of practitioners. Many people will practice cultivation in the future. Won't those who cannot ascend in cultivation practice become the ordinary people of the future? If they all don't do anything, what benefit would it have to society? I'm telling you, it will benefit the society. The people of the future, or all of our people, after they've improved themselves through cultivation practice, will think about it. When people refrain from wrongdoing from the heart, doesn't it spare you the business of doing good deeds? If nobody has those, if nobody does bad things, if everybody is that good, I'm considerate of you, you're considerate of me. If all people were that good, then I say, wouldn't public security and social order all improve? In actuality, we are talking about the fa, or the law in the heart, about how a person truly changes himself from the heart. Well, what you do externally, such as encouraging people to enforce justice, of course it's a good thing, but when you're advocating something or when the law requires you to do this, it is, after all, controlling you from the outside. It can control your surface, but it cannot control your innate character. Only when a man's innate character changes can things truly become better. That is the kind of principle we are talking about. Now, speaking of the issue of one's informed quality, doesn't it also involve the issue of enlightenment quality or 悟性? Or just saying that whether one's inborn quality is good or bad determines whether one's enlightenment quality is good or bad. That's the issue. So what is enlightenment or 悟? Let's talk about 悟. A lot of people don't understand enlightenment or 悟. Some people say, if a person is smart, that's 悟. These days, it's actually understood this way. Say, when this person is in front of his supervisor, or in front of his parents, or on other occasions, as soon as they say something, he immediately gets it and does what they expect. They say this person is really sharp. His enlightenment quality, or 悟性, is really good. Now it is oftentimes understood like that. I'm telling you, the enlightenment that we're talking about is not like that at all. Actually, this enlightenment is not at all an ordinary person's word. It's a cultivation term. A word used by cultivators. It's nothing like the 悟 that ordinary people talk about. Sometimes I go to temples and see that monks say so too. When they say a person's enlightenment quality is good, they mean he's sharp. If you throw some money in the collection box and kneel to pray to the Buddha, dung, the monk will sound the bell and say, "May Buddha bless you, give you great wisdom, make you smart." So they understood it this way too. What I'm saying is that it's not like that at all. The true enlightenment, or 悟, refers to the ability of a person in the course of cultivation practice to understand the cultivation itself, the Fa that his master teaches, and all the tribulations he runs into in the course of cultivation. Whether he can pass them, whether he can figure them out. The extent of his understanding, that's the enlightenment that we talk about. And this 悟 is totally opposite from the ordinary person's 悟. I'm telling you, on a high level, that principle is completely turned upside down. What you say is good is bad, and what you say is bad, they actually say is good. Let's talk about this 悟性. What ordinary people say is a person with poor 悟性, or a poor power of understanding. Actually, it's not a bad thing at all. If a person's 悟性, or power of understanding, is poor, people say, oh, he's really foolish. I say, if that person is foolish, that's a good thing. I say that a foolish person is actually the sharp one, or a person with good 悟性, a very sharp person, I say, is actually the foolish one. It is precisely upside down. So let's talk about someone foolish. Let's talk about a fool. No one says a fool is good. Who says that a fool is good? A passerby will see a fool and whack him on the head. Thwack! You big fool! Or kick him in the butt, boom, saying, "So stupid, go away." He cannot get any of his benefits in this lifetime. What are his personal interests? All get encroached upon by others. Doesn't everyone say he's foolish? But I'm telling you, there is nobody sharper than him. You hit him on the head and say, "You're so dumb." How hard you hit him is how much duh or virtue you give him. You kick him, you big fool. How hard you kick him is how much duh you give him. If you yell at him, you will also give him duh. What do his practical benefits count for? That bit of self-interest among ordinary people, a blink of an eye, 100 years, and it's all gone. While one's life in this long course is endless. However, he has been deprived of all his practical interests by others. How much you take from him, that's how much duh you give him. Go ahead, yell at me, hit me, take from me. I'll gladly take it all. Do you say he's foolish or sharp? And as for his thinking, it's just that his flesh brain is not too quick. It doesn't work too well, but his true spirit, or yuan shen, is not foolish. I have discovered that some fools, some slow-witted people, have their brains locked up. They all came with a purpose. They are not average. It's locked up so that they don't become sharp and ruin themselves among ordinary people. Isn't that the case? Then also, what people call sharp. Of course, we don't want you to become that kind of fool. If you did, how would you practice cultivation? If you were like that, you could never cultivate. If you were as dumb as a brick, if you didn't understand anything, what kind of person do we require you to be? What we require is that when it comes to self-interest, you take it very lightly. Just by doing this, people will already say you're foolish. But conversely, they discover that you are not foolish. Why? Because at work and in other things, you always do very well. Who could say you're dumb? I'll give you an example. When I was teaching a seminar in the Northeast, there was this kind of a person. He was a university lecturer. In the past, he was also a cultivator of his para spirit, a cultivator of his para consciousness. When he first appeared, he was extremely good. Now he's no good, ruined among ordinary people. Because his para spirit succeeded in cultivation and it left, but he was ruined among ordinary people. But at the time, this person maintained the following attitude at work. He belonged to a Qimen cultivation way, or an unconventional cultivation way, and he would say, what is mine, I want, and what is not, I won't fight for. He maintained this kind of attitude in handling things. Actually, his system required him to be this way. For example, they were allocating apartments at his work unit, and everybody who needed an apartment was brought together, and everybody had to present their circumstances to justify why they should get an apartment. If you think you should get an apartment, you should present your circumstances. Say a little about your qualifications, so everyone would present why they were able to request an apartment. Apartments were limited. Not everyone could be given one. So everyone who lacked an apartment was presenting their circumstances. Everyone was doing their best looking for what would qualify them. He sat there not saying a word. Finally, the supervisor weighed the circumstances and said, an apartment should be given to him. There's one for him. Others wouldn't stand for it and started saying, the apartment can't be given to him. How could it be given to him? I need it. And so on and so forth. And if this were an ordinary person, he would have started a row with them. Even the supervisor has given me the nod. The apartment should be given to me, and you're still arguing over it. Aren't you arguing for my apartment? Wouldn't he start a fight with them? But he didn't. He said, if you want it, then take it. These words sound very simple, but think about it. If in practical life, this kind of person, when the interests are very acute, for a person to say such words, wouldn't people say he's dumb through and through? This person's just too stupid. The others didn't understand him and asked, those who were concerned about him asked, if you don't want practical benefits, what do you want? He replied, I want what others don't want. I want what others don't want. That sounded frustrating to them. They said, tell us, people today, what don't they want? Anything will do. The rocks on the ground that people kick around and no one picks up, others don't want them. Do you want them? He said, then I want them. Of course, he wasn't really going to pick up those rocks. He just expressed a principle that ordinary people cannot enlighten to. What principle? We cultivators have to give up these attachments. These things don't mean anything. What I gain can be kept forever. Things that can all be kept for 100,000, a trillion years, and your things are gone in a blink of an eye. He said, as cultivators, we give up these attachments. We don't fight with others. If it's mine, I want it, and if it's not, I won't fight for it. But ordinary people cannot enlighten to this principle. Let us say something on a higher level. As an example, let's tell a joke. People have said that the paradise of ultimate bliss, many practitioners have been to the paradise of ultimate bliss. They say the paradise of ultimate bliss is very beautiful. The paradise of ultimate bliss is made of gold. Trees are golden, the ground is golden, houses are golden, Buddha's bodies are golden. Even the birds are golden. Total splendor. But over there, you cannot find a single rock. People say that what they use for money over there are just those little pebbles. Of course, this may or may not be true. We won't say. Of course, there is a saying, rarity makes it precious, scarcity makes it valuable. Things are precious and valuable only if they're scarce. Of course, he was just expressing this point. He wasn't really going to pick up a rock. When I succeed in cultivation, I'll carry a rock with me. That's not what he meant. He just expressed a principle that ordinary people have no way of understanding. Just now we're talking about a foolish person, or a person who takes his interests lightly. Now conversely, let's talk about a sharp person. A sharp person is no good. Ordinary people say that a sharp person has good wuxing, or power of understanding. I say his wuxing is precisely poor, it's not good. To a sharp person, practical interests are very important. Moreover, usually such a person knows how to do superficial work, so supervisors think highly of him, and he'll get things that others cannot get. If he got things that others couldn't get, then And didn't he harm others? Didn't he get things that others were supposed to get? Then doesn't he have to pay them back with dirt or white matter? This kind of person gains a lot of practical benefits, and they become more and more important to him, and thus his heart becomes narrower and narrower. Practical interests come to be more dear to him than anything else. Doesn't he become that kind of person? Think about it. Such a person is usually very selfish, and thus his heart is narrow. He thinks he's being practical. What cultivation practice? As soon as he hears about it, he thinks it's ridiculous. What, qigong? Where is there such a thing? In his mind, he's laughing at you. He thinks that all of this is just talking superstition, that you're all being silly. Look at me, he thinks. These practical benefits that I've gained, now that's being truly capable. Of course, there are some people who look up to that kind of person, because they're all ordinary people. We're saying, try telling that kind of person to maintain de, to let go of attachments. He's very hard to save. What we are talking about is not that kind of person, right? Whatever a person does, whatever good fortune you have, didn't it all come in exchange for de? If this tiny bit runs out, then you'll have nothing left. It'll be gone forever. Tell me, isn't he foolish? What we mean by a person with good enlightenment quality, or wuxing, is just what I was saying just now. Someone able to seek the Tao and has this wish in his heart. At the same time, in the course of cultivation practice, with regard to various troubles, he can understand. Some people, after practicing for a while, they always write to me these kinds of notes saying, teacher, I've been practicing for a while now, how come I have discomfort here and discomfort there? You think practicing gong is eating honey? You think practicing gong is lying in a cradle? Where is there such a thing? Practicing gong is precisely the bearing of hardship, repaying your karma, so you have to suffer, you have to hurt. You just dust off your butt? Just like the example I gave the other day, this person wants to go abroad because living conditions are better in some other country, and you want to go over there. You're in debt up to your ears, could they let you get away with not paying it back? Don't you have to pay it back? You have to repay all your debt. If you owe it, you must repay it. That's also a principle. We can open up a convenient door for you, allow you to hear the Fa, and also help you to practice cultivation and dissolve a part of your karma. However, this karma itself still has to be partially paid back by you. It wouldn't do if you didn't pay it back, and while paying back karma, you can at the same time suffer and gain elevation of yourself. It's just a question of whether some of us can enlighten to it. Unpleasant things in every respect happen to some people, and in society they meet up with one difficulty today, meet up with another difficulty tomorrow. Sometimes you feel that there's a lot of pressure at home and there are disagreements with your spouse, or maybe a supervisor at work, or even in society there's pressure. As long as you can treat it like something you can let go of. When you've gotten past this, when you've overcome this hardship, when you look back at it, you'll see that it was nothing. Can it have any impact? It has no impact. Some of the elderly among us, retired people, or people who are a little older but are still employed, look back upon the first half of your life. Have you had 3 consecutive good days? No matter what social level you're on among ordinary people, you haven't had 3 consecutive good days in your life. If it's not something physical, it's something mental. Perpetual cares and incessant worries. You have not had 3 good days. Troubles come like waves. Before one is over, the next one arrives. If, when you ran into conflicts in daily life in ordinary human society, or if at work, you had taken these things very seriously, you wouldn't have lived to this day. If you had taken these things really seriously, you wouldn't have survived to this day. But when you look back on these things, what had seemed so insurmountable at the time are now nothing. Hasn't it all gone by? If, when the tribulation comes, you see it as being very large, then you actually descend very low. You're actually looking at it from below, and it appears insurmountable. But when you let go of the attachment, you discover that you are big and tall, and the tribulation is tiny. You get over it with one step. There's nothing to it. Chinese people have a saying, take a step back and you'll find that the sea is vast and the sky is boundless. When you're in a conflict with someone and you're just going at it, that definitely won't lead to good results or good consequences. But if you take a step back, if you don't lower yourself to be like him, you will find that it's a whole different picture. Isn't it so? It's guaranteed to be this way. That is to say, in the course of cultivation practice, you will encounter these troubles, but you must regard yourself as a practitioner and handle it correctly. That's the only way you can get over it. If you don't have any tribulations, people like that, I say, that's very precarious. Maybe nobody's taking care of you.
是吧？这个
This still belongs to what we refer to as enlightenment within the course of cultivation practice. Actually, the enlightenment or 悟 that we really refer to, there exists a fundamental enlightenment, which is that a person, in the course of cultivation, from the beginning of cultivation practice all the way to the end of cultivation, when he has suddenly cultivated to the end of the path that he's taken, the end of his cultivation path, when he suddenly completes his whole course of cultivation in that one instant, it explodes. Suddenly, his cultivation energy is opened up, or 开工, and suddenly he becomes enlightened, or 开悟. This is called sudden enlightenment. Exploding open all at once. After he's been suddenly unlocked, he understands. He sees the reality of the universe on his level. All his divine powers are exploded out, and all the locks on the forms of the changes in his body are exploded open. Then, at that stage, this person manifests great divine powers. Tell me, is he still an ordinary person? In the Taoist school, he is called a true man. In the olden days, the people would have called him a god. Because we cultivate Buddha, we say he has reached the realm of completion, or Yuanman. Buddha was also a cultivator. Of course, what I was just talking about belongs to the case of sudden enlightenment, or 顿悟. Then there's also a kind called gradual enlightenment. What I am talking about is the actual enlightenment. What is gradual enlightenment? It means that as you are cultivating throughout your life, your Tianmu, or third eye, goes from seeing a blur to seeing clearly. Your supernormal powers go from small to great. Gradually, the ones that should emerge, if you are able to control yourself, are allowed to emerge in you. The level of your Tianmu gradually rises, and at the very end, after you've gone little by little through the entire course of your cultivation practice, you will have reached the highest point. Then you will also be able to see everything, and your supernormal powers will have been fully open. You have come to this point little by little. There's no instant explosion. You have come by the way of gradual enlightenment. Your whole course of cultivation, at a certain high level, at a low level, it wouldn't work. You can't see it. But at a high level, you can completely see how you're going through cultivation, how you're making your way. You have gone through cultivation knowingly and consciously. This is what we mean by gradual enlightenment, or 见悟. This is the fundamental enlightenment. You know, in Buddhism, in the Zen sect, they also talk about sudden enlightenment and gradual enlightenment. They take these things to be... I'm saying that the Zen sect is digging into a dead end. They take these things absolutely. They think that instant enlightenment is when you enlighten to it all at once, while gradual enlightenment is, of course, no matter how they debate it, in fact, they are referring to an understanding of a principle or a question. Whether you understand it gradually or you understand it all at once, that's the issue. You say, I understood it instantly, or I understood it gradually. I say both are right. There's nothing to debate. They've been debating it for quite a long time in history. Both are right. Why do I say they're both right? Because if you came to understand some principle gradually, I say that's not bad either. Earlier or later doesn't matter in enlightenment. If you enlighten to it at once, that's even better. It shows that your enlightenment quality is high. Your inborn quality is good. That's why you could do it. While if your enlightenment quality is not so good, you have to enlighten to it gradually. So both are correct. It's nothing but enlightenment with regard to principles, and they've been debating it for so many years. Actually, the enlightenment, or wu, we talk about is the fundamental enlightenment. The sudden and gradual we refer to, it's actually the fundamental enlightenment, while the instant or gradual that they are talking about is just enlightenment with regard to principles, to specific issues. I understood this one issue instantly, and this issue I understood gradually. That's what they talk about. Just now we highlighted the issue of enlightenment. While giving the lectures over these past few days, I also mentioned some other terms and expressions. For example, a person of great inborn quality. Such a person of great inborn quality is very hard to find in society. Some systems have very high requirements. It takes so many years, several decades, for one such person to appear in ordinary human society. For those with even higher requirements, it takes a few hundred years for one such person to appear. And for even higher requirements, they say, only once in quite a long period of history can there appear a person who can receive the things of their school. This is what people mean by a person of great inborn quality. Such a person is very hard to find. His ability to bear and endure is beyond what other people can do. If other people tried to do it, they would go insane or suffer a mental breakdown. That's what we are talking about. A person of great inborn quality has to have several qualifications. One, of course, is that he has to be a person with great de, or virtue or white matter. He has to have a lot of them, and it forms a great field around him. In addition, such a person must be able to bear suffering amid suffering. What does that mean, suffering amid suffering? It's easy to say. It sounds easy. And saying it is also easy, but doing it is extremely difficult. That person, if you don't believe it, when you're in ordinary human society, now when you're listening to the Fa in my field, your mental state is very good. When you are among ordinary people, that mental state won't necessarily be that good. Then when under those conditions there arises a conflict, will you be able to bear it? And if right when you are going through that conflict, when you can't resolve it, there arises another conflict, will you be able to bear it? And if yet another conflict comes along, what will you do? That is, he can bear suffering amid suffering. Such a person is very hard to find, and it's also very hard to do. In the past, I used to give an example. Let's not give an example. That is to say, man himself is in the midst of suffering. If you have to suffer more, it will be very hard to bear. Just like the joke I told the other day. I was saying, there's this person. Let's make it in keeping with modern day life. Business wasn't going too well for his work unit. They were having trouble paying his salary, so the work unit had to reorganize, and maybe some people got laid off. If you lose your permanent source of income, it definitely doesn't feel great. But of course, you're not the only one. So this person is left without an income. He goes home in low spirits, feeling terrible. Once he gets home, he finds that his old man has fallen ill, seriously ill. Quick, send him to the hospital. They get to the hospital, but without a work unit, where can he get a check? Without money, one can't stay in this hospital. So he borrows the money, then anxiously makes sure that the old man is settled in at the hospital. After that, as soon as he gets home, the school teacher calls saying, your child beat up another kid in school. Come take a look. Think of how much anger and stress have built up. This is just an example. It's just a joke. There's no such thing. With much effort, he finally settles all these things. He sits down to catch breath and says, what a day. How am I to live through this? It's so stressful. And as soon as he sits down, there comes a phone call telling him, your wife is having an affair. Just telling a joke. Tell me, how does one live? Forget it. I don't want to live anymore. I'll find a rope and hang myself and put an end to it all. That is to say, he cannot bear it. Actually, man is just in the midst of suffering. He's suffering. Suffering in cultivation practice. They say it's easy for a person to cultivate, that in a few decades you can succeed in cultivation. Tell me, human beings are in the midst of suffering. Religions also say that man is in the midst of suffering. People don't understand. Why is man in the midst of suffering? Everyone has gone through it like that and came from the mother's womb, so nobody thinks they're suffering. I'm telling you, once you have this body, this physical body, thirst gets you, hunger gets you, heat gets you, cold gets you, fatigue gets you. Anyway, there's no comfort for you. And this doesn't yet include the worrisome matters that arise from people's attachments, from their sentiments or qing, plus natural disasters and disease karma, plus birth, aging, illness, and death. And you say man isn't suffering? Precisely in the midst of suffering. But since everyone goes along like this, they don't realize it's suffering. I read a newspaper article about a special social survey conducted after the Tangshan earthquake. A lot of people were resuscitated after the earthquake. After they died, they were revived. These people were asked, what did you feel in the state of death? Contrary to expectations, what these people said were all the same, from person to person. They said that at the moment of death, there was no feeling of fear. Just the opposite, there was a feeling of exhilaration, as though liberated. And once their body rose up in the air, they felt neither light nor heavy. They were very comfortable, neither hot nor cold. Really wonderful. Some could also see their bodies. Some had gone to some places, some had seen other beings. Of course, we're not going to talk about that. It has nothing to do with us. We're just talking about this feeling. Once man has this body, it brings him into this state, so you don't know what it's like without it. Of course, without this body, you are also not lost in the delusions of ordinary people. You can see everything. Moreover, in that one instant, in the instant of death, when one's true spirit comes out, in that instant, all the good things and the bad things that were done in this lifetime, no matter what thing, each and every instant stands vividly before the eyes. One by one, they appear very clearly before the eyes. When suddenly one is liberated, not restricted by the brain anymore, it's all very clear before one's eyes. Just now I said a person can bear suffering amid suffering, then he also has to have the heart of great忍, or forbearance or endurance. Let's talk about Ren. What is the heart of great Ren? Of course, we're telling you, as a practitioner in this class, the first thing you should live up to is don't hit back when hit, don't curse back when cursed. Also, the Ren we are talking about is beyond an ordinary person's understanding. He thinks your don't hit back when hit, don't curse back when cursed. What's up with you people? You've all become
RQ.
He will think like that. Well, an ordinary person is just an ordinary person. The principles are overturned at high levels. There they think you are sharp. Right? Think about it. If, in ordinary human society, a person who has self-restraint and patience doesn't lower himself to behave the same way as others, if you swear at me, I'll ignore you. I'll keep a lofty attitude. People would not say that that person is foolish. They say that he has such a lofty attitude. He has a big heart. They praise him. Actually, I'm telling you, Ren, or forbearance, is not some RQ mentality, or fear, or weakness. I'm telling you, it's not. It's not weakness at all. Just the opposite. It's a manifestation of one's strong willpower. If you didn't have such strong willpower, you could never endure it. When commoners face insult, they draw their swords to fight. You curse me, I'll curse you. You hit me, I'll hit you back. Then they're just ordinary people. When commoners face insult, that kind of person, how can he be expected to cultivate? You know, there is the following legend in history. There's such a historical story. Han Xing, you know, the great general under Emperor Liu Bang in the Han Dynasty. It can be said that he was the pillar of the state for Liu Bang. Historically, this character was very powerful and very famous. Why could Han Xing do great things? Because since his childhood, he was not an average person. There is the following story about his youth when he was practicing martial arts. Martial arts practitioners used to carry swords. One day, when Han Xing was walking alone in the street, a man came in front of him with his hands on his hips, blocking his way, and said, "What do you carry a sword for? Do you dare to kill a man? If you dare kill a man, cut my head off." And saying this, he stretched his neck out. Han Xing thought, "What's the point? Why would I kill you?" In those times, if you killed a man, would there be no consequences? Would you also have to go to court and pay for it with your own life? So Han Xing didn't kill him. Seeing that Han Xing didn't dare touch him, he said, "If you don't dare kill me, then crawl between my legs, otherwise you can't get past me." So Han Xing really crawled between his legs. This character could take such great humiliation. People said that it is precisely because Han Xing could go through humiliation for the sake of a greater goal, because he had such great, amazing forbearance, that he could achieve greatness later on. And he was just an ordinary person. And we are required to be extraordinary people. We have to do even better than him. Of course, you won't encounter the situation whereby you're walking on the street and somebody wants you to crawl between their legs. But to not be perturbed by the feelings that emerge in the interpersonal conflicts and intrigues between people is very difficult. I say those are no easier to handle than this. They're no easier. Of course, one also has to be able to give up. One also has to be able to maintain de, or virtue. I was just talking about the principle of preserving de, of not losing de. One's enlightenment quality also has to be good. Of course, if one's inborn quality is good, then one's enlightenment quality, or wuxing, is good. One has to meet these requirements to be considered a person of great inborn quality. Since time is limited, that's all for today. We have completely finished lecturing on this fa as of today. Could we lecture more? If I were to divide it up and discuss it, I could continue to lecture. If I were to sit here and lecture for a year, I'd still have things to talk about, but it would be of no benefit to our future cultivation practice. Many problems depend on everyone enlightening to them. As for specific problems, I can't tell you about those. If I were to discuss all the specific problems, what would you have left to enlighten to? What would you have left to do? All the opportunities and the environment for your cultivation would be gone. All the conditions would be gone. So when you run into specific problems, you should act according to this Fa, how you should do it well. Basically, we've told you everything that should have been told to you. You can also refer to the recordings from my other seminars. In these 10 classes, I've told you many things. As for whether I have been responsible to you during the seminar, the public can judge for itself, so I won't discuss these issues. Our seminar as a whole, I think, has been very good. From the beginning to the end, and finally we have brought it to a successful conclusion. Everyone, more than 3,000 people here have traveled great distances from other regions. The most far away are from Heilongjiang Province and Xinjiang Province. Coming here from 4,000 or 5,000 kilometers, or more than 8,000 Chinese miles away. It's a long way. All of you have gone through many hardships. Many people are even short of money. There have been those who had to subsist on instant noodles or have been gnawing on biscuits. What for? All of you have come here to learn this Fa or this law, to obtain this Fa, right? So all of you know the preciousness of this Fa. Of course, in these 10 classes, we've tried to meet your demands, to make it convenient for you, and we've also tried to tell you more, to explain it to you thoroughly, so that you are able to understand, so that when you cultivate from now on, you'll have a Fa, or a law, to turn to. That is to say, during these 10 classes, all of you have been watching me, right? And I have been, be it bringing you up to high levels, or be it purifying your bodies. The purpose is to allow you to be able to cultivate from now on. That is to say, after the 10 classes have passed, in the future it will depend on you. Whether or not you can cultivate, whether or not you can do it, depends entirely on you. But we have said, since we're already sitting here, all of you have the predestined divinity, right? I think when you go back, you might as well give it a try and see how it goes. For those who can persevere, then persevere and continue cultivating. However much you put in is how much you will gain. This is guaranteed. We have had many experiences in this respect. Many students have had a lot of first-hand experiences from their cultivation practice, right? I think they're enough to provide us with a lot of experience. It can provide a lot of experience and teach us various lessons. Well, in short, sitting here today, we cannot just waste these 8 days or these 10 days or more time. Dafa, a great law. For a person to truly obtain something is very difficult. Once you obtain it, if you don't treasure it, it'll be too late by the time you come to regret it in the future. Chinese people have a saying, if you pass this village, there won't be another tavern, right? Throughout the lectures, all of you may have felt it. There isn't another qigong master who lectures like I do. In our country, I say, truly bringing people up to high levels, teaching this Fa of higher levels, is being done only by me. Actually, in the whole world, there isn't anyone else. In the whole world, to tell a joke, in the whole world, there's only I who am doing it. Of course, be that as it may, the purpose is to allow you, in this kind of historical period, in this kind of environment of complicated human minds, to allow you to obtain a righteous Fa, to be able to truly achieve improvement, to be able to truly achieve cultivation practice. Even if you don't practice cultivation, after you have completed the seminar, you will also be a good person. Isn't that so? I believe that it will be so. Many of our students have said to me, teacher, after I finished listening to a few classes of yours, my entire perspective on the world changed. It is this way. Nowadays, in this giant wave, in this giant current of human society, people take wrong for right, bad for good, and evil for kindness. This is already formed into concepts. When everyone is going along with this current, being attached and pursuing, and I suddenly say things that are completely different from those people's notions, for many new students, when it comes to accepting it, they know it's good, but they may not be able to understand it or explain it very clearly. From now on, you still have to continually work on studying, practicing, and listening. Only then can you gradually comprehend and deepen your understanding. So I hope, after you finish listening to these lectures, you won't just leave it like this. You need to go back and read the book a lot and listen to the recordings a lot. Only then will you be able to keep improving and ascending. I don't want to say more. Finally, I'll leave you with these words. When, from now on, in the course of cultivation practice, if you ever feel it's very hard to endure, if ever you feel you can't do it, you must think of these words of mine. What words they are? It's hard to do, but it can be done. It's hard to endure, but it can be endured. I hope everyone will be able to succeed in the completion of Dafa cultivation practice.